Hello and welcome to another edition of Talking Points. It's episode 9. I'm Dave Parkinson and alongside me is Adrian Jackson.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to be here on Talking Points.
You said that last time.
I know, I'll say it again.
Right, well, what have we got coming up on this particular episode? Well, we're going to have a look at all the results from last weekend. We've got a couple of big talking points to discuss, namely Kyle Eastmond and how it looks like there's a bit of a tug of war emerging at the moment between whether his services are going to remain in rugby league or whether he's going to take the lure of the money and head off into the dark code. We'll also look at the international squads that coach Steve McNamara has named, and a little bit of a difference coming up in there because we've got an elite training squad which has been announced and an England Knights team, but we'll tell you all about that. And we'll also have a special interview with injured Widnes star James Ford, who's hoping to make a comeback this coming weekend. And we'll look forward to all the fixtures. So I guess, first of all, where shall we start? Northern Rail Cup, last weekend.
Sounds like a good place to start, doesn't it? Round four, the last games of the round robin ties before it was decided who's going to finish where in Pool A, or Pool 1 and Pool 2 in the top four to go through to the knockout stages.
And looking at some of those results, there were some really big games which took place, weren't there, at the weekend?
Yeah, I suppose the biggest game was in Pool 1, wasn't it? Featherstone Rovers versus Widnes Vikings, the big guns of the championship, going toe-to-toe in a game at the Big Fella Stadium. With someone's 100% record, it was going to be ending in the game on Saturday. It was Widnes who came away with the points.
It certainly was, yeah. They built a 22-0 advantage, and after 65 minutes Widnes were flying and were perhaps odds on to really go on and make that a convincing performance. But fair credit to Featherstone, they fought back.
They did. Not many teams have gone to Featherstone, have they, in the last couple of years and had an 18-0 lead at half time. So that gave Darryl Powell's men plenty to think about during that half time break, about what they could put right, what went wrong in that first half. And they came out all guns blazing in the second half, but Widnes just about did enough.
Yeah, Widnes scored tries from Grady, Tyra and Thackeray. Thackeray's was a brilliant effort. He intercepted on his own line and went the full length of the field. So he's just a man who can't stop scoring. And when he's on form, Widnes are on form.
It is always good to go the length of the field, but Featherstone's is a tight pitch, so can you call it the length of the field?
Well, it was, you know. I mean, he's still a 90-metre run, a 90-metre interception, and nobody got anywhere near him. And, you know, Featherstone have some quick backs, but Thackeray was quicker than the lot.
Yeah, third place to Anthony Thackeray. Playing well, isn't he, for the Widnes Vikings, and he seems to be the key player.
Another player who's impressing me currently for Widnes is Steve Tyra. He's really knuckled down and picked up the challenge since not getting the first choice nod, if you like, of that centre spot.
Yeah, without doubt. I mean, he joined Widnes Vikings to resurrect his career after such a promising start to his rugby league career with St Helens. He's got another opportunity to force his way back into rugby league, and he's got off to a flying start here at Widnes at the minute. Big question is, can Stephen Tyler carry on that good form?
Well, let's hope that he can. He's certainly good to see another prolific point scorer. Mick Nanning's been doing it for years, hasn't he? So it's good to get Tyra being up there or thereabouts. Featherstone, they were well served themselves, scored three tries in the end through Stuart Dickens, Zach Hardacre and Sam Smeaton, with Finn kicking two goals from three and missing perhaps his easiest attempt of the night, which really did give Widnes the breathing space they needed.
Did they? Because, like, Featherstone literally threw everything but the kitchen sink at the Vikings try line, didn't they? So Dennis Betts would have been happy with the first half performance in particular, but he'd be happy as well with the defensive show put on at the back end of that game.
So a couple of other results to tell you about. There was a winner-takes-all clash over at the Tetley Stadium where Dewsbury Rams met the Barrow Raiders, and it's the Dewsbury Rams who got through in that one.
Is it fair to say this was a surprise at 16-12 to Barrow Raiders, or did everyone expect it?
Well, I think certainly looking at that, I mean, Barrow would have been heavily fancied despite them having perhaps a slightly thinner squad than they have had in recent years. But, you know, Dewsbury, they're a decent side. I mean, they've got Dominic Brambani running things in the middle of the field. He's a very accurate goal kicker as well, isn't he?
He is. He slotted over 6-6, which was the difference with Dewsbury getting the points that were required.
Now, my Barrow spies tell me that Gary Schofield could be under a bit of pressure already.
Yeah, I don't think that by not qualifying for the Northern Rail Cup, that pressure's not going to go away, is it? To be honest, Barrow Raiders are a considered big team within the championship as such, and they would have been expected to come away from Pool One into the knockout stages. So a big blow for Gary Schofield's men, and then he'll be looking for a better start in the championship, because if he doesn't get it, it could be a difficult ride for him.
Another big game that took place in the Northern Rail Cup was over at Halifax, where they hosted last season's winners Batley Bulldogs. And Batley, they dominated the opening stages of that one. They led 22 points to 6 at half time. And that's never easy, is it, going to the Shay and getting into such a great lead?
No, not at all. Pretty similar to Widnes, really, at Feversham. It's never easy to go there and get the lead at half time. But again, during them 10 minutes at the half time break, Halifax had plenty to think about. And in the second half, came out all guns blazing, but the damage was done in the first half.
Tries came for the Bulldogs from Hesketh, Retty, Manning, Moore, where the goals split between Hanforth and Moore. And I believe there was a penalty right on the stroke of full time, which guaranteed victory for the Batley Bulldogs by 26 points to 25.
Big victory for Batley Bulldogs. They were outside the top four going into this game. No one really fancied them to get the results at Halifax. So good preparation from the Bulldogs, and Kyle Harrison proving what a good coach he can be.
He's done it again for them, hasn't he?
He has.
He's pulled another result out of the fire. That does ensure that Batley Bulldogs go through to the knockout stages. Halifax, well, they had tries from White, Chandler, Warinsey grabbed two. Jones kicked four goals, and Ben Black also struck a drop goal. And that's all been done before, hasn't it, from Black?
It has. It certainly is a player with some ability.
Any of the other results that catch your eye onto the rest of them, Adrian?
I suppose the big one's got to be Sheffield Eagles going down to Hunter Hawk, 16-12.
Perhaps a surprise result, that one. Menzieri going over for a try early in the second half, and Hansen scoring a little bit later on. But the damage was done in the first half, really, for Huntslet, wasn't it? They scored the first points through hockey and then had a great finish with Grimshaw.
They did, and Huntslet looked like a decent team, and they looked like they could have a decent season.
Well, I mean, currently, they're in the qualifying position, but we are recording this before a game on Wednesday night between Whitehaven and Halifax, so things could change quite dramatically, couldn't they?
Could do, because obviously Halifax would be looking to bounce back to winning ways, but Whitehaven, they had a good performance and a good victory at the weekend, so they'd be looking to build on that and push themselves into the knockout stages.
Perhaps one of the outstanding games for me was over at Rochdale Hornets. They lost a real high-scoring encounter, 36-40 to Doncaster. I don't think tackling bags were on show in training ahead of that one.
No, without a doubt. If it had been summer rugby at the weekend, it would have been the case of defences were on sunbathing duties.
Toulouse Olympique carried on their recent good form. Free scoring Darren Nichols, grabbing his fifth try of the season. And also, I noticed Josh Lewis. We've spoke about him previously. But Josh Lewis coming up with a try, and Brendan Wirth coming up with the winner in the end.
Yeah, good result for Toulouse, wasn't it, really? And they were looking to continue the good start to the season. And it was a hard-fought game against a very inexperienced London Scholars team. So even though in defeat, the men from London can take some confidence from that.
Now, you've seen London Scholars in the past, haven't you? And certainly they came up against Widnes earlier in the season and ended up going down to quite a heavy defeat. Since that day, though, they seem to have improved almost tenfold.
Without a doubt, obviously, the more game time they get used to the pace of it all as well, and they get to work out their opposition, seem to be working better as a team. They will get better as the games come and go.
Up in Cumbria, Workington Town, they were defeated 42 points to 12 by Leigh Centurions. And the highlight there was two tries for Steve Maiden, five goals from the boot of Mitt Nannin. But there was a good performance from young Scott Kagan. He scored two tries and kicked two goals. In fact, he scored all the points for Workington Town, and he's a player of some promise, isn't he?
He is, and Leigh look a decent team this year, don't they? They've got a lot of power in the pack, and Ian Meal Ward's men are going to be a good threat to the rest of the opposition during this Northern Rail Cup competition and in the Championship. And by winning the game against Workington, they did exactly what Widnes had done and won all four games.
Yeah, so both Widnes and Leigh finishing top of their groups, winning all four encounters. And are there any games that we haven't mentioned in the Northern Rail Cup there, Adrian? I'm just having a think. Gateshead 4, Swinton 76 was one. Oldham 4, Whitehaven 14. Perhaps a bit of a shock result there, with Whitehaven winning over Oldham. They wouldn't have been expecting that one. And York City Knights 28, Keith Lycurgus 22. So what does that mean? Well, Pool 1 is all done and dusted. Widnes Vikings, Featherstone Rovers, Dewsbury Rams and Toulouse Olympique have got through to the quarterfinals, while in Pool 2, Lee Centurions and Batley Bulldogs have secured their passage, but Hunslet and Swinton, who currently are in positions 3 and 4, could find their positions under threat with that last game.
Without a doubt, it's all to play for, isn't it? It certainly is a winner-takes-all situation. Whitehaven get 3 maximum points. They'll be in the playoff zones, and if Halifax do it as well, they get into the zone as well. But even if one of them teams do get beat, it's important that they do get the bonus points as well, because that would be enough to stick them through.
And it's a difficult encounter, that, for Halifax, isn't it? They've got to go all the way to Cumbria on what will undoubtedly be a dark and damp Cumbrian night, and they've got to face quite a vociferous crowd up there at the recreation ground as well.
Never easy to go to is Whitehaven, is it? And even though they've kind of fallen on hard times in 2011, it's not the strongest of Whitehaven teams that we've always expected to be seen in years gone by. But they'll be going all out guns blazing to try and get the victory and say to the world of rugby that Whitehaven, they may be down, but they're not out.
Have you visited our new live score service? Everyone's talking about it. LoveRugbyLeague.com. Now for Super League. And it was round 3 at the weekend, and some big games did take place, didn't they, Adrian?
Yeah, I suppose the big game was on Friday at the Halton Stadium, wasn't it? It was Warrington versus St Helens. It's been 10 years in the making for Warrington to get a victory. So I'm sure the most popular question being asked on Friday before the game was, could Warrington get that elusive victory against St Helens? Well, the answer was yes.
Yeah, and they played really well. They basically scored 3 tries in the opening 20 minutes of the game. Lee Breers grabbing 2 tries, Richie Myler touching down from what was a beautiful kick from Brett Hodgson, wasn't it? It was a real piece of vision, really, you can say, from the old stager in the Warrington team.
Yeah, it was. Breers outstanding, wasn't he? And so was Brett Hodgson for the Warrington Wolves. And the kicking game was the difference, as it seemed to be a bit more effective than what St Helens could produce.
Now, certainly we were there and we were discussing that particular game from the press benches up at the Halton Stadium, and I know, remember you turning to me after Anderson scored saying, this is it, this is going to be the winner now for Warrington.
It was enough, wasn't it? They had enough points on the board, and even though St Helens came back into that game with 15 minutes to go, Warrington's defence was just magnificent.
Shenton, Flannery and Gaskell scoring the tries for St Helens, Lomax kicking 1 goal, Foster kicking 2, but there was no denying Warrington. Hodgson kicked 4 from 4 and Breers almost the customary drop goal.
Yeah, he had 3 attempts, didn't he? It was third time looking for Lee Breers just to settle the nerves a little bit, because St Helens were within a converted try from levelling things up.
Any other games that sort of caught your eye last weekend?
I suppose the big game has got to be Headingley. Leeds Rhinos expected to win quite easily and quite convincingly against Harlequins at Headingley on Friday. But the boys from London, since we've got the season off to a flying start, haven't they, with another victory against Leeds, 36-26, they give them 3 from 3.
I tell you what, their coach, Rob Powell, he came into basically this season with nobody knowing who he was, but he's quickly gauging himself a bit of a reputation, isn't he, for turning round this Harlequins team.
No one gave him an absolute chance at the start of the season, did they? They looked at the fact that it was a new coach, new set of players that had come in, and everyone was really questioning the strength that Harlequins did have. But at the start of the season, I know there's still a lot of rugby league to be played, it seems to have turned around quite quickly and turned them into what is a very good team.
He's got them performing as a unit, hasn't he, I think. There's no real standout players in that Harlequins lineup, but yet they're all playing very, very well as a unit. They're making very few mistakes, and they're scoring plenty of points as well.
Certainly no superstars in the team, are they? They're just a hard working unit of players that want to get on with the job and get the victories that are required.
Luke Gale also chipping in with some more assists. He's really started the season so well, hasn't he?
He has, and he'll be looking to build on that, won't he? He's got a big reputation within the world of rugby league, and he'll be looking to build on the start he's made.
Perhaps a shock result for me was over at Hull Kingston Rovers, with Catalan emerging 31 points to 18, and they didn't look like they could beat an egg in the previous 2 games, Catalan, but they've gone all the way to Hull Kingston Rovers, who ran Warrington so close just the other week, and well, they've come up with a surprise result for me.
Without a doubt, I'm sure the coaching staff and the players at Catalans will be telling you it's not a surprise. They're being confident to go in there and getting the job done. And at 12 apiece at half time, all still to play for, but Hulkingston Rovers just couldn't get going in the second half, and maybe the injury to Dobson really knocked them sideways.
Yeah, we're hearing that Dobson's going to be ruled out for perhaps up to 10 weeks, which is a huge, huge blow for Hulkingston Rovers, isn't it? Because he is just such a key player.
He is. Everyone was talking about the halfback combination with Blake Green. Can it push Hulkingston Rovers forward? A lot was expected from them too, and it looks like that partnership is going to be put on ice for the next couple of weeks.
Literally. But yeah, there's also just run through us who was the scorers in that game.
Scorers for Hulkingston Rovers were Blake Green got two, Sean Briscoe got the final try for Catalan Dragons. It was Munez, Saar, Damien Blanche got two, and Rajan and Menzies, the old warrior, coming in with a try for Catalan Dragons.
I think that was his first try as well, wasn't it, for Catalan, from memory?
I think it is.
And Duro kicking three goals and also kicking a drop goal as well, just to make sure.
Without a doubt, and that's a big victory for Catalan Dragons, because there won't be many teams going to Hulkingston Rovers this year and running up 30 odd points.
Now, we talked about the sack race last week, didn't we, between Sean McRae and Richard Agar over at Salford and Hull, respectively. Both those teams were in action, and for Richard Agar, the anguish goes on, doesn't it?
It does. Pressure's on, isn't it, really? He was expected, or he would have been expecting to get a victory against Huddersfield Giants. But the Giants, pretty awesome at home, aren't they? It's always going to be difficult to get the victory from the Gal Farm Stadium. And Huddersfield getting off to a cracking start through Hodgson. Two tries in 9 minutes. Set the ball rolling at 10-4 at half-time. Hull FC, sorry, were still in the game. But despite the try from Sharp on the 44th minute, That was as good as it got for Hull FC, because Huddersfield kicked on with tries through Michael Lawrence and Kevin Brown.
And encouraging there for Huddersfield that over 8,000 fans in attendance again.
Without a doubt, big attendance for Huddersfield, isn't it? They've always been renowned for the team to get less than 3,000 or 4,000 in the Gal Farm, but 8,000 would have made it a decent atmosphere.
And Nathan Brown, he's moulding together what should be a pretty efficient team, isn't he?
They were an efficient team last year, weren't they, and the year before that, but they have lost one or two players to opposition clubs, and people were probably thinking, can Huddersfield produce that kind of form they have shown since Nathan Brown's gone in charge? And at the minute, the answer is yes, they can.
And one team that did produce some form, we touched on it before, was Salford City Reds. It's been a long time in coming, but they beat Wakefield Trinity Wildcats by 32-6. Quite a resounding result, comfortable in the end.
I'm sure Sean McRae would have been smiling at the results of that one. He's been under a lot of pressure, not just from people working within the game via media outlets, but also these home fans who booed the boys off at half-time and at full-time against St Helens the week before. And that's a big result for Salford City Reds. It gets the ball rolling, they got the first win, and they'll be looking to use that as a springboard to get more victories and propel themselves back up the table. And it gets the Booey boys off the back of Sean McRae for once.
And I was just thinking Salford, they had the perfect opening, didn't they? Ratchford scoring after just a minute's play.
Always a good time to score, isn't it, the first minute? It really sets the stall up, doesn't it? They caught the opposition cold. And that just puts the seed of doubts within the opposition when they score so... Well, sorry, when they concede the try so early into the game. It gives the opposition that are making the journey from Salford to Wakefield, it gives them the confidence to kick on from there, doesn't it?
It certainly does, yeah. And, well, they scored a couple of early tries. We've already mentioned Ratchford's. Wild went over. Henry ended up with two tries but scored one after 16 minutes. And all that Wakefield could muster in response was a bit of a scrappy try, really, from Lee. And then in the second half, Salford continued their efficient ways, didn't they?
Yeah, Rob Parker getting a try as well for Salford City Reds, but it was the boy Henry. He didn't have the best of seasons last year for Salford City Reds, but he's come in there on Sunday and got two well-taken tries.
And young Sidlow as well coming through, scoring a try for his efforts.
Yes, young Sidlow seems to have been around a while now, doesn't he? He started off at Widnes Vikings and now he's made his way to Salford, and he'll be looking to push on now with this stage of his progress as a Super League player.
The only Super League game that we haven't mentioned yet came over at Wrexham, and I think I was surprised at this game. Not perhaps for the results, because Bradford Bulls ended up winning that one by 30 points to 26. But by the attendance,
just 2,500, wasn't it? Just over 2,500. So not the attendance the Crusaders are hoping for. Certainly a club that's gone into administration, and they'll be looking for more backing from the home fans to really give them the finances required to make them a stronger club off the field. And it didn't work out as planned on Saturday. Just 2,500. Is that an early warning sign that people in Wrexham are growing tired of rugby league?
Well, let's hope not, because it was looking like it was perhaps the start of a new stronghold for the Code last year, wasn't it, in that area?
It was, and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that they can kick on from what they started in 2010. It will be a success.
Now, Bradford, they made things difficult for themselves, didn't they? They scored quite a pile of points, then were just hanging on near the end.
They were tries from Lynch, Royston, Ains going discing, really set the ball rolling for the Bulls, and really had a real healthy scoreline at half time of 18-8. But the Crusaders hit back through Witt, Thomas and Samut, really closed the gap, and then Shukovsky came in with a try, but that was merely consolation. Even though Martin did score in the last minute, it was consolation because Bradford had already knocked up 30 points. And I'll be honest with you, if you were a team that scored 30 points on the road, you'd be disappointed to come away with nothing.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think 30 points should be enough to win any game, shouldn't it, to be honest?
It should be, yes, but if you're the team that's gone there as the away team, if you get 30 and concede more, you're going to be pretty gutted.
So what does that mean to the engaged Super League table? I suppose it's still a little bit early to look at it, but Harlequins out there on top.
Surprise for everyone, isn't it? 3-3 for Harlequins. No one expected that one, to be honest. The rest of the top eight is Castleford, Huddersfield, Leeds, Warrington, Wigan, St Thomas and Hull Kingston Rovers. And the bottom half, it's Catalan Dragons, Bradford Bulls, Salford City Reds and Hull FC and Wakefield. And the Crusaders in the bottom two, both on -2 points.
I think it's warming up quite nicely, though, during these early stages. What did you make of perhaps that last weekend of action?
It proved to me that on any given fixture in Super League, I know it's been noted and said before, but it is more evident in round three, that any team from 1 to 14 can beat each other on the day.
Come and join in with our Fantasy Rugby League competition. LoveRugbyLeague.com. There is just one game that we didn't round up from the weekend, and I don't know whether I want to. The Australians ending up coming out on top in the World Club Challenge. This used to be a trophy which belonged over here to the Super League title winners. Where's it gone wrong?
Well, I'm sure they were probably looking at that one this morning, weren't they, Wigan Warriors? 15-14 up at half time. Got off to a great start with George Carmont. But St George, everybody questioned the build-up to this one, the preparation. There was no pre-World Club Challenge warm-up game like normally, like a few of the teams have done in the past. They just literally turned up off the plane at the start of the week and basically said, let's get on with it. And that seemed to be their attitude. I think that preparation set him in good stead.
I'll tell you what, you mentioned Carmont, though, and certainly his second try was an absolute stormer. He took the ball some 60 metres away from the try line, and basically it was put the afterburners on, wave the kids goodnight, and away he went.
Well, it's a great try, wasn't it? Well taken as well, and Carmont showing he's got a good eye for a try anyway, and he's shown a lot of pace to do it against a very physically fit and fast Australian club team.
So for me, St George Illawarra, they came back really strongly. Brett Morris in particular, he showed just what a quality finisher he is.
Two tries for him as well, wasn't there, on the 10th and the 29th minute, and yeah, he really did show a lot of skill and a lot of strength to push his way through that Wigan Warriors defensive line. But overall, I thought St George just about deserved it, to be honest. They had a lot of power up front, didn't they? And they weren't scared to throw the ball around.
No, certainly the left wing pairing of Cooper and Morris can trouble any team in the league, couldn't it? It could trouble any team in the world.
Yeah, it was a lethal combination, wasn't it? Morris getting two, Cooper getting one. And they seemed to complement each other's game.
And I was quite interested to see young Cameron King getting on off the bench for St George Illawarra, because I only saw him a few months ago playing for the Australian schoolboys.
Yeah, a young kid with a big future, isn't he? And it just shows his ability when St George are not too worried about putting in such a young lad in such a big game.
Soward kicked 2 goals from 4 and also a drop goal. And just to complete the scoring of that, Deakin kicked 3 goals from 4 attempts for Wigan, with Tompkins adding a drop goal. But a bit disappointing that, really, for Wigan in the end.
Really was. It's something for them to learn off, and I'm sure they will learn some big lessons in that game.
I read something saying that it was basically a clash of two wrestling styles, because Wigan, of course, with the defensive patterns that were brought in last season, they did so much tackling and so much work around the wrestle area, but yet they were just out-wrestled.
They were, weren't they, really? I thought St George played Wigan at their own game and got the better of them as well. And St George's play as well, seemed to have Mr. Ali Burr blowing up for a lot of penalties, and some of the decisions were really confusing the Australian team at times.
How did you think Mr. Ali Burr coped with it in the middle?
It's going to be. It's always difficult because, one, he's French, isn't he? He's only ever refereed in Super League on a regular basis. But he had an opportunity to referee a game involving an Australian team, a club team, that is. And it's a different technique in Australia, so he had to cope with two different techniques. And I thought he coped rather well.
OK, so that's the World Club Challenge done and dusted. And it's heading across to Australia with the St. George Illawarra Dragons. And they were hit late last week, weren't they, with their coach Wayne Bennett having to go home because of family illness.
They were, and obviously that would have been a major upset to the preparations. But I'm sure that the St. George team would say, our thoughts are with the coach, and we're back home in Australia. And they did it for him, and he just carried on what he set out. The only question I've got against the World Club Challenge is the timing of the event. I think really probably the best time to play this tournament would be the end of the season rather than the start of a new season, only because some of the players that might be in the St. George team or the Wigan team weren't playing for them clubs last year.
Yeah, good point, actually. I mean, someone was saying to me just yesterday that they thought that it would be better probably that week after the grand final.
Without a doubt. I mean, obviously, you'd have to have a look at where the Four Nations are going to be starting. But am I right in the Australian grand finals the week before the one at Old Trafford? So that gives them the time to, if they've got to come over to the UK, that gives them the time to prepare to come over to the UK for it to play a game probably a fortnight after it.
I don't know about you, but I'd quite like the game to perhaps alternate between the two hemispheres.
Without a doubt, but obviously, I mean, they are going with this idea of the winners take it back to where they're from, isn't it?
Well, I guess we'll find out with that one, won't we? We'll have to see if next year...
No, it isn't, is it?
Yeah, we'll have to see if next year Wigan, or whoever wins Super League, I'm judging there, aren't I? I'm guessing that Wigan's going to win it. Don't bombard me with your messages. We'll have to wait and see on that one, I think.
Yeah, without a doubt. A good performance for St. George. They'll be having a few drinks on the way home back to Australia with the World Club Challenge trophy in the bag.
Follow us on Twitter. Love Rugby League. Just a couple of more talking points that I want to go through, Adrian, with you. And the first one, Kyle Eastman, the Willy Won'ty saga. And this seems to be really holding St. Helens up.
It's affecting his play, isn't it, really? The longer this is going on, it seems to be getting into his head, and he's not concentrating on what he should be doing, which is producing a good quality performance of 80 minutes rugby league for St. Helens. Because in the game against Warrington, whether he had one or two things on his mind still, he seemed to be ineffective against Warrington.
He was. He was totally ineffective. I think, again, I've read something on the game, and really, he only came up with two things of note in an entire 80 minutes performance. And when he is, or supposedly is, the fulcrum of a team and everything should be running through your scrum half, let's get it right, he just wasn't that man on Friday night, was he?
Not at all. I think the people who are handling Kyle Eastman need to sit him down and say, listen, we need to make a decision now to get it out in the open. You can draw a line underneath it, accept what he's going to do, and then carry on. If it is the fact that he makes the decision to go into rugby union, draw a line up on it, and then concentrate on having a big season for St. Helens before he clears off to the other side of the rugby league world.
Certainly, Roy Simmons, he wants an end to it, doesn't he? He sounded very frustrated after the game.
It's frustrating for everyone involved, isn't it, really? Because it's not fair on Kyle Eastman, it's not fair to the fans, and it's not fair to the club because everyone's in limbo.
Do you think he'd make a good rugby union player out of interest? I think he's a bit small, actually.
I'd like to see him stay within rugby league, because I don't think he's achieved everything you can expect to achieve within rugby league. He still is only a young lad, so maybe he's thinking is he can go over to rugby union and he can come back in a few years' time, a bit more experience from having tried both codes.
I suppose you look at it, and some other players have done that same step, haven't they? They've gone across to rugby union, they've tried it, they've stuck the toe in the water and come back. But others, like Leslie Vianacolo, for example, he stopped over in that game.
Well, that's obviously their choices. They've obviously decided they prefer playing rugby union to rugby league for one reason and another. It's maybe it's the fact they've had a successful stint that they've decided to stay within the 15-side side code. But for Kyle Eastman, it's a big decision. I'm sure he'll make that decision. And whether he decides to stay or not, it's going to upset some people.
Some people have pointed to the fact that perhaps with the rugby union salary cap being so much higher than the Super League salary cap, that isn't helping to retain some of these younger players which are coming through the ranks. Do you go along with that?
I partly agree with that one, yes, I do. Because obviously, because rugby union have got more money to spend on players, they can tempt our rising youngsters, our stars of the future, to maybe go over cross for more money. But I'm not in agreement of maybe rugby league clubs raising the salary cap, because one thing you don't want to be doing is having clubs spending money that they haven't got.
Do you think there should be some dispensation, though, perhaps on young kids coming through, and that perhaps a certain percentage of their wages don't get counted on the cap?
That would help. I'm sure the clubs might want to look at that one and push that idea towards the RFL's thinking machine and maybe do a few number crunching. That would help to retain these youngsters. But at the end of the day, it's a business, and it's a sport, isn't it? So the players can come and go wherever they feel they want to go.
Is it really a problem, though? I mean, you look at it and, okay, Eastman, fine player, potentially an excellent halfback. He's still learning the game.
He is.
And yet other players have... It's not really a constant drip, drip, drip of players, is it? You look and I think there's only Ian Thornley of the younger generation who has gone over to rugby union.
Yeah, I totally agree with that one. And like I said, he's not the finished article, is he, at all? And if he does go, it is a big blow to not just St Helens, but British Rugby League in general, because we were expecting to build a Great Britain team round the likes of Kyle Eastman to maybe defeat Australia. And if he does leave the game to go to rugby union, now we need to scratch round and look for someone of his ability to give us some hope.
I suppose he was one of the triangle of players, if you like, that a lot of hopes have been pinned on. Richie Myler being one of the others over at Warrington, and Sam Tompkins over at Wigan. It was like a golden trinity, if you like, wasn't it, of players who perhaps England or Great Britain or whatever we're going to be called in a future international event, perhaps we could build a team around.
Well, this is something we need to look at, isn't it? We need to look at trying to keep all of these youngsters. We're producing the youngsters and we seem to be losing them to a rival sport. Rather than losing to a rival sport, I'd sooner see them youngsters go and test the water out in Australia. Mm. At least then they're staying within rugby league and they're at the services of future Great Britain coaches.
So similar to what George Burgess has done, for example, in going over to South Sydney.
Yes.
LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs. Well, that leads us quite nicely onto our final point in this particular episode. We've just had word of the international squads which have been announced by Steve McNamara. Now, this got me a little bit confused as I was reading through, because there's two squads which have been announced. There's an elite training squad, which is 32 players who will meet at fairly regular points throughout the season for additional training sessions in order to try and help the international game. And there's a squad called the England Knights, which is mainly made up of young players.
I suppose it gives the youngsters an opportunity to be playing and training on the international setup, and it gives them a bit of experience to build upon when they do get the chance to join that elite training squad.
It seems a bit strange, though, that international squads have been announced. We've not got any international fixtures yet.
He's obviously getting the boys ready for the 2013 World Cup. So he's obviously thinking Steve McManaman. The earlier he gets the boys together for training sessions, the quicker they'll all settle down into a game plan and they'll work out and know how each other plays.
I suppose this is a good thing, because certainly over in Australia, there's a lot of players who end up going into Origin camps, isn't there? So they're already honed, if you like, to that mentality.
Without a doubt, and it's something that we need to look on as well, and look at maybe better preparation for the international team, certainly for the forthcoming Rugby League Cup.
Now, looking down this list, there's some interesting names and a couple of interesting omissions as well, I think. Somehow, despite his injury, Danny Maguire has got in there for Leeds.
He's obviously a proven talent, isn't he? And he's got the ability. Now, whether he can produce it when he does play against Australia, that's always been the big question that's never been answered, has it, by Danny Maguire. But he's got the ability. He's a bit older. He's got a bit of experience. And I'm sure he'll be looking to take the chance when it comes his way again.
Ben Jones-Bishop, he's signalled what has been a great start to him in Super League this year with a call-up to the squad. Fully deserved?
I'd say it is. He's playing well on the wing. It's all about picking your best players at the time. And it gives him the opportunity to train in an international setup. Help his experience as well.
Let me just run through another name. Louis McCarthy-Scarsbrook for St Helens. I think that's a surprise.
Big surprise, isn't it? Because when he was playing well at Harlequins, he never got the nod to join the international setup at all, did he? So it just goes to prove by moving north to St Helens, that kind of makes it easy to get selected.
Let's run through the full list. We've got Chris Bridge, Ben Harrison, Adrian Morley, Richard Myler and Ben Westwood from Warrington, Tom Briscoe from Hull, Peter Fox, Liam Watts and Chris Wellham from Hull Kingston Rovers. And that's a deserved call-up for Chris Wellham. He's been on form in the opening couple of weeks of Super League, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's like I said about Jones-Bishop, it's all about selecting the players that are playing well at the time, and Chris Wellham, certainly one of them players.
What do you make of Liam Watts getting the nod in there?
Surprising one, that one, really. He's a young lad, isn't he? And he's obviously done the right things to get into the mind of Steve McManaman, that he can do a job for England whenever he's picked.
The Leeds players are Rob Burrow, Ryan Hall, Ben Jones-Bishop, as we mentioned, Danny Maguire, as we also touched on, and Jamie Peacock and Kevin Sinfield, who recently agreed his contract to stay with Leeds for life.
A liner for life, isn't he? And, yeah, a lot of experience as Kevin Sinfield, but I'll be honest with you, he's never really produced it on the international scene.
For Huddersfield, Danny Bruffy's in there, and considering he was the captain of Scotland, I think that's a strange one. I don't like how players can seem to pick and choose their international nationality, if you like.
Yeah, I think once you make your decision to play for an international team, that's where it should stay, really. You shouldn't be able to like change your mind because you want to play for England rather than Scotland or Ireland. And the same applies for Chris Bridge and Ben Harrison.
If that had been the case, then Ryan Giggs over in football would have been playing on the wing for England for many years, wouldn't it?
Exactly. So I think the NFL need to look at a way of eliminating that, where players can play international rugby for a country 1 year, then decide, hang on a minute, I want to play for another team instead.
They need to close the loophole, don't they,
for me?
They
do, yes.
Earl Crabtree, Leroy Cudjoe and Luke Robinson complete the Huddersfield set of players in there. And quite a lengthy list from Wigan. Michael McLaurin, Paul Prescott, that's a surprising one.
He's been playing well, hasn't he, in the second row for Wigan. He's got a lot of ability within his game. And again, it's all about selecting the players that are playing well at the time. And he's certainly one of them players. And his time training in that England elite squad, maybe it'll help him as well.
Could be the making of him, couldn't it?
Could be, yes.
But I mean, a few years ago, he was shoved out on loan to Lee, and everybody thought he'll never come back. But to be fair to him, he's really fought and grabbed a constant 17 spot in what is a very good Wigan team.
He has. He's obviously learned from his loan spell at Lee, and he's decided to roll his sleeves up and get stuck in, concentrate on his game, do everything right that's required of him, and he gets the rewards, and that's one of them.
Sam Tompkins, Joel Tompkins and Sean O'Loughlin complete the Wigan contingent with James Graham, Louis McCarthy-Scarsbrook. Leon Price has been recalled after a bit of time in the wilderness from St Helens alongside James Robey, Michael Shenton and John Wilkin. Does any of that lot from Saints surprise you?
No, not really. That's probably the best of the bunch at St Helens regarding England. I suppose everyone will have their eyebrows raised at Leon Price's inclusion because he has been out in the wilderness for a bit, but Steve McManara has obviously got a lot of faith in the skills and talent that Leon Price does possess within his game.
One player who I think does deserve the call-up, Tony Club from Quinns. I thought he came into the Four Nations team last year, scored four tries on his England debut, so they couldn't really drop him, could they?
No, not at all. I thought in that Four Nations he's done enough to earn himself a place on a regular basis in that England setup.
Perhaps the only bolter, Brett Ferris from Castleford.
Now, that one has surprised everybody, hasn't it, really? It's just literally come from nowhere, to be honest. But the boy's done enough to suggest to Steve McManara, again, that he can perform on a higher level.
Certainly, Terry Matteson has rated him ever since he's joined them. He used to play over at Wakefield as well, didn't he, Brett Ferris? And I think he started off at Bradford as well.
He did.
Still interesting. Let's hope that he does well. The England Knights, now, I mentioned before, this is a young team. But there's a bit of experience in here. I'm looking at some of these names as well. We've got Joe Arundel and John Walker from Castleford. Perhaps no surprise there. They're two young players looking at making the way. And Joe Arundel, I think, has started this season particularly well in the Castleford centres.
He has. He is a young lad with a big future within the game. Highly rated by the Castleford club anyway. And they'll be looking to keep all of his services for a long time. They'll be looking to build a team Round a player like Joe Arundel, and he's deserved his chance to again play and train at a higher level.
There's Ryan Atkins and Chris Riley from Warrington. Surprising there?
I think they'll be surprised to be named in there, because I think in their minds they would have been wanting to be on the list where Ben Harrison, Adrian Morley, Richard Mile, Ben Westwood and Chris Bridger being named. And I think they would have been expected themselves to be in the elite training squad rather than the England Knights. So for them, maybe it's just Steve McManara's way to dangle in the carrot to him.
I think as far as Ryan Atkins is concerned, though, he had a little bit of a disappointing Four Nations. I'm sure Atkins would admit it himself. He didn't really get going in that tournament.
No, not at all. And that's what I mean by Steve McManara probably dangling the carrot to them. He probably saying to him, you're still in me mind in terms of selection, but by putting you in the England Knights setup, he's basically asking questions of Atkins especially and Riley to produce it on a regular basis and push their way into the full training squad.
Three players from Salford in there: Jody Broughton, Stephen Ratchford and Matty Smith, with Josh Charnley, Liam Farrell, Daryl Goulding, Stephen Marsh and Lee Mossop coming in from Wigan. A couple of names there which were at Widnes last year.
I thought Lee Farrell is an outstanding talent. I'd be surprised if he stays within that England Knights setup for long. I think he's good enough to join the elite training squad.
He's put some size on in the close season as well. I saw him in that World Club Challenge game, and I tell you what, I thought, where's them shoulders come from? They weren't that pumped up last year.
It just shows you what the benefits are of being a professional rugby league player training on a regular basis.
There's three from St Helens in there: Paul Clough, John Lomax and Scott Moore. And John Lomax, for me, is a very exciting talent.
He is, and he's one of the young talents that we need to be looking at to stay within the game, don't we? He's probably in that group of players, like Zakhar Leisman, really, where we're looking to build a squad around those players, and hopefully John Lomax can produce it when it's needed.
Two young players from Bradford also making the cut-off for the England Knights, James Donaldson and Elliot Whitehead, and we've touched upon the form of Whitehead, but what do you make of Donaldson's selection?
Surprising one, isn't it, really? But he's a bit like Brett Ferres, really. He's just literally, his name's come from nowhere. But if you speak to people at Bradford, he's a young player with a good attitude, and he's progressing rather smoothly.
Very highly rated as well, isn't he, by the coaching staff up there?
Yes.
Huddersfield have a large selection. They seem to have taken up half the squad with this list, actually. Dale Ferguson, Michael Lawrence, Jermaine McGilvery, Lan Patrick and Sean Lunt. Any of those names surprise you?
No, not at all. Michael Lawrence is a proven try scorer within rugby league and Super League level, and he'll be looking at that as his chance to force his way into the elite training squad.
We've been building him up over the last couple of weeks, but Luke Gale has got the nod. So do you reckon we can claim some credit for that?
I think we can do. Yes, we've been pushing the name Luke Gale around for quite a bit at the Quinns, and he's one to look out for.
Callum Watkins gets in from Leeds, and completing the squad, Joe Westerman from Hull.
A bit of an enigma, Joe Westerman, isn't he? He was tipped to have a big future a couple of seasons ago at Castleford. Never progressed as expected, to be honest. He's moved over to Hull. Maybe the change from Castleford to Hull will help his game as he gets older and he'll be able to produce what was expected of him a couple of years ago.
I have to admit, I always thought with Westerman, when I first saw him, I thought he's like another Paul Scunthorpe, very multi-skilled and talented player.
He is, he's got the skills and he's got the ability, but he had a couple of bad injuries that cast that obviously may have slowed his progress down. So it's an important couple of seasons ahead for Joe Westerman. He needs to buckle down now and kick on and progress forward, because if he doesn't, when people look back at the career of Joe Westerman, it'll be a case of never really produced it to his full potential.
Come and talk rugby league in our forums, loverugbyleague.com. Now on Talking Pints, we're going to have a chat with James Ford from Widnes as the injured centre looks to start his comeback trial. We asked him about his career as well and how that's developed. Joined by Widnes Vikings star James Ford. And James, I would imagine that it's a very frustrating time for you, because you've never really seemed to be able to get going for one reason or another at Widnes.
Yeah, you're certainly right there. I think it's something that's plagued me for the last couple of years, really. Signing for Castleford and then picked up three or four injuries in my two-league season, and I think I've probably carried that a little bit of misfortune over the Pennines to Widnes, but it's something me, the condition staff, the medical staff are working really hard on resolving.
We're just at the end of what has been a titanic struggle, really, between Featherstone and Widnes, with Widnes proving victorious in the end. What were your views on that particular game? It finished 22 points to 16 in favour of the Vikings. Perhaps a few more points should have been scored by the Vikings.
Well, first of all, I'll say it was an absolutely marvellous game, thoroughly entertained. I think both sets of players should be proud of the displays there, especially in these conditions. Lots of skill, very ferocious, and lots of energy on the park. Maybe more scores should have been scored, but you've got to credit the Featherstone defence. Quite well organised, scrambled hard, and they certainly let the Widnes boys know that they were around.
Does watching that type of game make you sick?
It makes him a bit more frustrated that you're not out there, especially living close to the area. I was dead keen to come back for this game. I tried training the start of the week to try and force my way back in the team. Probably in hindsight, the wrong thing to do, as I probably nicked my quadricep again and made it a little bit worse. But these are the games that, as a player, you want to play in, and hopefully I'll be back sooner rather than later.
You played down here at Featherstone, didn't you, at one point?
Yeah, I was an academy player down at Featherstone. It's a different club to what it was now. Under when Gary Price was the head coach. Played around 10-15 first team games before I moved to South Yorkshire and played for Sheffield.
I think you've had what could be turned a very interesting career, to be honest, you know, because you've kind of like pushed the boundaries and were one of those players just as Sheffield Eagles were getting back on the feet again.
Yeah, I probably did things a little bit differently to other people at Featherstone. I don't think I was that highly rated as a young player, and checked with, in my eyes, a little bit of disregard by the coach staff at the time. I moved to Sheffield, and the coach there, Mark Aston, certainly believed in me and helped me a lot mentally. I improved quite rapidly while at the club, and then as a result of that got a chance in Super League, and then for one reason or another didn't quite take that chance. In my eyes, maybe lack of opportunity due because of injury and other players around me playing really well. I'm just looking now to go and get back into the form that I've showed for Sheffield.
And how long is it until you're actually going to be fit and raring to go and pulling on that Widnes jumper again?
Well, I promised Dennis I'll be fit to train on Tuesday, and I'm hoping to play against Siddall, and that'll be a tough game. Siddall will be really up for that, and I've seen Siddall play a couple of times, and they certainly are a strong team.
And of course, they came up with a couple of shock results last season, didn't they, in the Challenge Cup competition?
Yeah, I think they beat Doncaster 28-0, I think, if I can recall. Yeah, they're a good team. A lot of the players have played professionally in National League 2, some in National League 1. And they'll be certainly up for it. I mean, it'd be like their cup final playing against Widnes. It'd be like similar to us drawing Wigan or St Helens. It's something that they'll be looking forward to.
And I suppose as well, from your point of view, you'll be looking at some of these outside backs, and they played well today.
They certainly did. Stephen Tyre had a great game with the boot. Tangerine Pratt had another solid game. They obviously, us three are competing for the centre spots, and we've probably got the three best wingers in the league in Paddy Flynn, Dean Gaskill and Matt Gardner, so it's difficult to get in the team. Hopefully I'll get back in there, as I didn't lose my place for lack of form just through being misfortunate, really.
Well, I wish you the very best of luck. I hope that you can get over all these injury niggles and we get to see you playing to full potential in a Widnes jumper.
Well, thank you very much. Hopefully I'll be playing in the centre as well, not a full back.
We live the game, we love the game.
loverugbyleague.com.
And finally, on talking points this week, let's just have a rundown of what fixtures we've got coming up.
Okay, then we've got the Challenge Cup this weekend, round three. The road to Wembley starts for the Championship clubs, and we've still got one or two amateurs in there as well this weekend. So the games on Saturday are going to be seeing Doncaster take on Fatter Heath, Featherstone Rovers versus the Army, Keighley Cougars take on Toulouse, Lee Miners are at home to Barrow Raiders, London Scholars take on Egremont Rangers, Milford Marlins take on Gateshead Thunder, Swinton Lions versus East Hull, and Whitehaven take on Lesignan. The boys from France. On Sunday, it's Batley Bulldogs versus Fryston, Halifax take on Castleford Loughlane, Huntsville Hawks versus Warrington Wizards, Lee Centurions versus Hull Dockers, Northumbria University versus York City Knights, Oldham versus Huntsville Warriors, Rochdale versus Workington Town, Sheffield Eagles versus the Leeds Met University, Siddle from Halifax take on Widnes Vikings, and South Wales Scorpions take on Dewsbury Rams. Now, we always like an upset in the Challenge Cup, but I'll be honest with you, from them fixtures, I can't see one.
I can see one potential one, and I'm only thinking on the rate of points which Gateshead have been conceding, I think that Milford Marlins will probably fancy the chances, the Leeds side.
Probably half a chance for them, isn't it, really? But I don't know. That probably could be an upset, but I can't see it.
We must say as well that Keighley Cougars must have drawn the short straw, because I think they've played French opposition in four of the last 5 years, and you're never going to get an away following from France, are you?
Not at all. It's a big game for Jason Dimitri's men, isn't it, as well? They need to get back to winning ways after the action from the Northern Rail Cup, and I think they'll be feeling a bit aggrieved that they have got to lose in such an early stage of the Challenge Cup. They might have been hoping to get one of the amateur clubs out of the bag, but the men from France are proven in their round robin games in the Northern Rail Cup they're a capable outfit, and Keighley will have the hands full with Toulouse.
You mentioned as well Rochdale Hornets against Workington Town. I think those two sides have drawn a short straw in not picking out an amateur team.
Without a doubt, but it's all about the luck of the draw, isn't it? You just got to get on with what you're being given, and Rochdale Hornets will be looking for a good home victory against Workington.
Siddle from Halifax, I think they've got the plum tie of the round, though, haven't they, against Widnes?
They have. It was talk, wasn't there, of Halifax going for a double header with Siddle, obviously from Halifax. Both games being played at the Shape, but due to health and safety regulations, it wasn't given the green light to go ahead. So Widnes will play at the unusual time of 11:30 on a Sunday morning.
I'm just about getting up and having me toast at that time. I don't know about going out and doing anything regarding rugby.
I'm sure Siddle will enjoy the game against Widnes Vikings. Widnes are a famous name within the world of rugby league in the days of the Chemics and the Cup Kings. They've been there and won everything that's been up for grabs within the world of rugby league over the years. And Widnes Vikings, they're a team on the up, aren't they? They've got big ambitions, and they'll be looking for a good cup run. And for Siddle, it's a good experience for them to play such a highly rated team. And as well, in terms of funds, they'll get a couple of quid as well, because I'm sure the Widnes Vikings fans will go there in big numbers.
Well, there was a good 500 of them there over at Post Office Road at the weekend, so I'd be expecting a very similar number heading across to Halifax.
Without a doubt.
Other games taking place this weekend in Super League?
Well, on Friday, of round four of Super League 16, three games on Friday, Harlequins versus Huddersfield, Hull FC take on Crusaders, Salford City Reds versus Wigan Warriors. On Saturday, it's Catalan Dragons taking on St Helens. Warrington take on Leeds Rhinos at the Halliwell Jones Stadium on Saturday night. And on Sunday, two games, Bradford Bulls versus Wakefield Trinity Wildcats, Castleford Tigers take on Hull Kingston Rovers.
Some big juicy encounters coming up this weekend then, Adrian.
There is, I'm sure the standout fixture is Warrington versus Leeds.
That is one to get the taste buds going, I think. If you love your rugby league, which we do at loverugbyleague.com, I guess all eyes are going to be on that one.
Without a doubt, it's a repeat of last year's Challenge Cup final, Tony Smith's former club. There's a lot of link-ups with the teams, isn't there? And plenty to play for, because Leeds need to get back to winning ways after that shot defeat against Harlequins.
Do you think Catalan can back up their victory of last week against St Helens?
it's within their ability, isn't it? They've proven they can score tries, but it's all about doing it on a week-by-week basis, and we all know Catalans, certainly last year, were very inconsistent. Now, whether the team for 2011 can rectify that, who knows, but they'll find out on Saturday whether St Helens can bounce back to victory after losing to Warrington.
Any other games that whet your appetite?
To be honest with you, I like the look of the Hull FC versus Crusaders game, because there's plenty to play for there. Hull FC, a coach under pressure. Crusaders, they're looking to get on 0 points with a victory, so that could be a cracker.
I'm looking forward to the Harlequins against Huddersfield Giants and seeing whether Harlequins can continue this run at the top of the league.
All eyes will be on there, and it'll be an opportunity for the rest of the rugby league world to see what Harlequins are like when that game's on Sky TV.
That's just about us done and dusted here for another Talking Points. But join us next week when we'll have a Championship launch special.